The planets do not cause the disaster, but they precipitate it. Just exactly as a person under a certain type of stress may have a long-enduring tendency to a thrombosis. This thrombosis could occur or can occur anytime once it is established as a probability. Yet the occurring of the thrombosis can be determined from a horoscope because the situation which precipitates must involve some stress or strain, some immediate situation that precipitates into fact the long-existing tendency. Now, it is conceivable that man is sufficiently sensitive to these psychic influences or to these groupings of planetary force that he can become aware within himself of the pattern which is going to affect something else. In other words, he can sense or feel or experience without mentation the qualities of the pressure or massing of planetary rays. If nature can precipitate events by these patterns, man can intuit these patterns. Thus he becomes a subconscious or unconscious estimator of the vibrations in the atmosphere around him and the probable intensities of these vibrations. And as these vibrations in turn are localized on the principles of geodetic equivalence, he may even be aware of the area in which these vibrations will center. Perhaps the simplest way would be to assume that there is in man a seer, inwardly capable of contemplating these patterns. And just as he can train himself outwardly to read in some degree of accuracy the relations of the stars in a nativity, so subconsciously perhaps he could read them even better without even knowing what he is doing. He simply receives the pure impact of the archetypal energy itself and then proceeds to differentiate this energy in himself, discovering in the process the meaning of the energy. Now, this might seem a rather circuitous way of doing it, but there is no doubt in the world that human beings have been able to intuit these things. And there is also no doubt in the world that most so-called forms of fortune-telling, whether they be according to the Yi Jing of the Chinese, or according to the geomancy practiced by the old Roman soldiers, or perhaps according to the cartomancy or card reading of someone like Mademoiselle Lenormand, that in some way these mechanical things, the cards, the dice, all of these symbols that are used in divination, they have to be interpreted. And the interpretation of them arises not in themselves, but in the person who interprets them. In the same way, one physician may be extremely intuitive in his diagnosis, so intuitive that there is really little need for him to make use of laboratory facilities at all. He senses the type of problem the sick person is suffering from. Other physicians do not possess this sensitivity, at least not consciously, and must depend upon laboratory reports. The tendency in medicine, however, is that the practitioner, who is sympathetic, understanding, and is largely dominated by the true principles of healing, will, through the course of years, intensify his own sensitivity. he will start out with very heavy dependence upon formalized methods, book forms of diagnosis, or laboratory reports. But having treated many who were sick, having carried many ailments through their various stages, he gradually develops an interior power to estimate what is to occur or what is wrong. It is quite conceivable by the same procedure that this rapport, this sensitivity, this high specialization may lead to a kind of clairsentience on many levels, including world prophecy. The seer who is always responsive to the psychic forces around him, and who therefore, in a rather relaxed manner, casts the dice or drops the little sticks of Chinese divination, immediately, mysteriously sees symbols, as Auntie used to see them in the teacup. You will see a group of tea leaves and they looked exactly like nothing. But Auntie had no difficulty whatever in proclaiming that that pattern was a kindly looking elephant. Another individual looking at the same pattern said, "It does not look like an elephant to me. What it really looks to me like is a cat sitting on its hind legs." Then Auntie will argue, "No, it just isn't. You're just not seeing it right." And this can go on for hours. Yet Auntie, because of her intuitiveness, is actually dreaming awake. She is imposing from within herself a meaning. And if she is sufficiently sensitive, her meaning may be correct. Because she, again, is sensitive to something, the force or pressure in life which is moving events. This means that there must be, and there is, in nature, as in man, some pattern which can be diagnosed. Nature cannot be merely blind forces moving blindly. If such were the case, no prediction could be made. There has to be a pattern, a scientific unfoldment of archetypes, by means of which it is possible for a sensitive person to tune in to one of these patterns. Now, the next thing that comes to mind in all of this situation is a little different, but has a bearing upon this. We assume that man's physical body is a sort of mirror in which his psychic life is reflected, so that his physical personality becomes the extension of a series of causal factors behind it. Let us assume for a moment that the physical earth is such a body, but that this earth is really the visible part of an elaborate structure, and that the invisible parts of this structure corresponds to the emotional, mental, and psychic life of man. Therefore, that predisposition to various physical conditions lie within the invisible parts of a structure. That what we would call, therefore, a physical circumstance arises from a series of invisible factors. That these factors group, and when this group of factors becomes sufficiently dominant, then the physical body or the earth body will receive this impression and will be molded or modified accordingly. Thus, things happening in the visible nature of things have an antecedent existence. They are existing through the process of becoming what they are. And things do not simply happen. They are motions of values moving into a precipitate state. They are gradually intensifying and intensifying until they become factual. or dominant in the material world. Let us use another parallel for this. An individual develops a habit. This habit is a kind of luxury of his thinking or of his emotions. He starts out, perhaps, with a pretty decent disposition. And then he begins to fall into a habit. A habit meaning a non-resistance to some negative factor in his own personality. And first, do you know, he nags a little. Well, anyone can nag a little. Most people do. Most persons who never gain reputation for nagging have occasionally indulged in it. But this particular individual found also within his psychic nature a tendency to be habit-ridden. And the nagging, which might have only been very occasional in another person, produced immediate results which seemed to fascinate this habit-prone person. He nagged a little. He got what he wanted. Like a child. This individual found that when he kept on pressing himself for his point, other people said, oh, well, let's do it his way if he wants it that way. So, he won. Well, having won by a negative action that is not especially meritorious, and having a natural tendency to be habit-ridden, this person really developed into a first-class nagger. At first, they nagged once a year. A little later, they nagged once a month. A little later still, once a day. And finally, all the time. Finally, they could no longer turn it on or off. It was no longer an expedient nagging. At the beginning, the individual nagged just at the times when it would do him the most good, or thought it would. Finally, he can't control it at all. It becomes like a habit addiction. It becomes a tremendous pressure. And all his willpower cannot get him over this instinctive habit. It may destroy many values for him, but he can't stop. Now, this has all been building something for a long time. For perhaps most of a considerable period, this nagging produced no visible result, except perhaps occasionally he got what he wanted. But after many years of this problem, the crisis came. The family got tired of it. And perhaps some very slight little nag, just at the critical moment, and this individual's family left him. The action finally occurred one afternoon, but the cause of it had been building for 20 years. But there was a moment in which this cause precipitated itself. Now, at the beginning of the 20 years, no one, perhaps, could have foreseen where this nagging was going to lead. But 6 months before the break came, any good analyst could have described very immediately what was going to happen. Because the reaction of all the persons had become so conditioned that it was merely a matter of time when the family would disintegrate. Tuning in at one of these later points by subconscious means, any individual who was intuitive could have announced the broken home. And by the degree of the intensity of the situation, could have said, perhaps not the day on which it would occur, but that the condition would not extend much longer. That it was only a matter of months or a year or two, and it was going to happen. Everyone involved was at the breaking point. Somebody had to break. So if you could have tuned in on this process at the correct moment, you could have very well diagnosed exactly what was going to happen and probably would have gained some reputation for being a wonder worker. But these things represent patterns building up. World patterns build up. The psychohistorian can see it. He realizes that a certain amount of competition, a certain amount of extravagance, the continuance of unsolved problems between nations, the gradual result of the industrial changes forced upon people, their mingling with other nations. But ultimately, these things are going to come to a head, that something is going to break, or that some major change is to occur. And if we tune in these patterns objectively by reason, we call our discovery of what will happen judgment. But if our conscious judgment is not up to it, but this pattern strikes against our subconscious psychic integration, it still it is judgment. But it appears to us as a flash of intuition. It appears to us as a miraculous foreknowledge. But this miraculous part is simply the fact that we have not recognized that all processes in nature are natural, and that the miracle is merely a process which we do not understand, but which must also be natural. There is no question that in the psychological atmosphere, as in man's psycho-emotional, personal atmosphere, vast motions of world affairs are in various degrees of precipitation. There is no doubt in the world that through a proper receptivity to the degree and development of these psychic patterns, we may predict with reasonable certainty the advent of a war. And by the development and degree of the pattern, the probability of the timing of that war. We can predict national decline, depression, and things of this nature if our subjective faculties are able to estimate the processes which are taking place around us in life. There is one other point that is also of some value in this, and I think we must consider it. Outwardly, man is heavily influenced by tradition. He is heavily influenced by the press, by the opinions of the learned, by the words of wisdom from the wise or otherwise. He is still strongly impressed by chatter, conversation, and opinion. This tendency to be over-influenced may result in his external thinking developing a pattern based upon prejudice, based upon immature judgment or the errors of other people. Five great commentators may come out and say our economic condition was never better, and 2 weeks later a depression. By the same token, a dozen world authorities may announce that a depression is inevitable, but it doesn't happen. This, however, has an effect upon us. And in the fear of this depression, we may panic. And if enough persons are sufficiently influenced by poor judgment of other people, we may develop a depression as a result. At the same time, however, that we are building up, these patterns dependent largely upon our respect for the opinions of others or our acceptance of the reports of experts, or the common feeling that many people have, usually negative. Contrary to this is our own psychic integration, which may, by its own detachment, by the fact that it has an existence in itself and is subjected to other types of influence than those with which we are physically surrounded, the psychic entity may come to a completely different conclusion about this particular group of symptoms. If the psychic entity is more thorough and more mature in its thinking, it will be more right than report. Now, I know in this particular case we are on very dangerous ground, because if we recommend that an individual always follow his own guidance and go contrary to the opinions of experts, we can also get him into terrible trouble. Theoretically, your expert is a trained guesser. He is an individual who has specialized in a field and probably knows as much about this field as is possible in the light of the degree of intelligence which he possesses. On the other hand, he can be wrong. He can definitely fail to take into consideration circumstances which perhaps he has not faced, or he may be over-influenced in himself by his own particular addiction to certain patterns of ideas. There are experts in this country that have been predicting a depression ever since we got out of the last one. Now, many of these experts are regarded with considerable veneration. We see around us enough symptoms to indicate that they might well be right. But someone may come along and out of a peculiar integration within himself, he may experience the fact that these men are wrong, because he is looking from a viewpoint tied to an archetypal sensitivity. And he is free from the fact that predicting a depression can also become a habit. And therefore, the individual falls into a situation in which he does not react to judgment, but reacts to prejudice. Under these situations, the inner life of the person, if it is well integrated, can anticipate more wisely than an expert by the process of intuitional recognition of value. Just exactly as I know a case that occurred in which the person engaged in hiring help and labor along a railroad in our Southwest was a very expert personnel man. He had been very successful in estimating the personnel that he employed. One of his laborers, a very common laborer who had never estimated much of anything, was an old Indian. One day, this personnel man hired a person as a bookkeeper. The Indian did not know what a bookkeeper was, probably. But after this man had enthusiastically hired this other man, the old Indian laborer who had been walking and standing around walked up to the personnel man and he said, "Excuse me, you have just hired a thief." So it proved to be. The Indian was nearer right than the man who had had many years of successful experience. The Indian had sensed something. He had an intuitive faculty, perhaps belonging to his people. In any event, he was right. He had felt and known more than this other man who was working upon, to a degree, working upon his former success. He had a little bit overestimated his own ability. These things happen. Children have these flashes of judgment that are wiser than the parental mind. They are not too common, but they do occur. And individuals living in a world in which things seem to be moving in one direction can suddenly become aware that this motion is false and that the facts are moving in an opposite direction. Such can result in an intuitional state. But all such intuitions must depend upon the fact that there is something to intuit. There has to be some reason, some process, some formula, some pattern existing to which the individual can attune himself. If nothing else, there must be a very highly skillful pattern within the nature of the thing about which he has a prophetic instinct. He must be able to experience something that tells him which way that event is going. And it has to be going that way, whether it appears to be or not. Then there is a religious conviction about this situation that certain prophecies are sent by divine power, that the individual, for one reason or another, will become an agent, as were the prophets of Israel, to warn the people of some event or condition which the celestial powers intend that man shall know about and later experience. Therefore, that the prophetic sense is given by God to certain persons to be used in the service of God by those persons. This is a matter of very attenuated theological conviction. That such can happen, no one can question. That such does happen, we are not too sure. But there certainly appears to be a time or a condition in which vision or insight is intercessional. That it comes as though to save a situation that is utterly beyond man's ability to control. Therefore, that a sudden insight must be imparted. We know also that periodic expressions of such insight are recorded in the development of people. Periodically, nations, races, clans, groups become deeply involved in some situation which could have desperate results. And in these larger collective patterns, the prophetic factor is often introduced. The emergency seems to produce a prophet, and this prophet becomes the instrument of warning. He becomes the one who seems to be intended to lead a group of people out of a disaster and into a better condition beyond it. Very often this type of prophecy is of extraordinarily detailed nature and was anciently held to be a power bestowed by the gods. Many of the older writers discussing this type of prophetic power held it to be the particular province of oracles, of anointed priests, of mystics, of heroes, and of divine beings sent into the world as instructors of men. Many scriptural writings contain prophecies. Many of these prophecies are described as originating in visions or in dreams, as in the vision of Ezekiel, or the visions of John on Patmos, or Jacob's vision of the ladder. These things seem to have been imposed upon man by a superior power for a particular purpose. And this purpose having been fulfilled, these prophets prophesy no more. That such a situation can be considered, we do not doubt. Whether this actually means that the individual receives these admonitions from deity directly, or whether beneath the psychological layer of the human personality there is a truly spiritual core, and that what might be termed the great vision, the vision for the healing of nations, the vision of the restatement of basic truths which man must re-experience or perish, whether these very deep roots are not perhaps linked to the spiritual power of man himself, who as a being participating in the divine nature may also participate in the omniscience of that nature, which is the condition of a spiritual all-knowing. Here I again get into a little trouble, because immediately everyone is going to feel that his mystical experiences come right from that core. But usually, further searching indicates that this is optimism. The type of person or individual that has these extremely powerful spiritual revelational experiences, the type of person is nearly always strangely outstanding, strangely linked to destiny. And in this revelation that comes, also comes the dedication to the ministry of that need. and dedication that frequently leads to martyrdom, and at least to years of patient and unselfish toil. The great vision comes to the dedicated person, not to the individual of uncertain life and means. And if the vision does arise from these tremendous subjective depths of man's spiritual nature, this vision or this experience becomes, for all purposes, an inevitable happening. The individual cannot resist it, and whatever it decrees, that he must do, to the complete elimination of himself if necessary. Such a deep, profound insight can never be followed by trivial action, can never be followed by the individual merely telling it to his friends and then go on as he was before. This type seems to be a breaking through of consciousness for a destined purpose. And this purpose is clear and continuous, and the consequences of it are universally benevolent. So that we can't assume that these experiences that we have all arise from any such deep root or condition. Now, those kinds of dreams which might normally or naturally arise from telepathy probably do arise from that thought. And your extrasensory band will explain a number of dreams, such as the individual dreaming one night that his father is dying and receiving a telegram the next morning saying that the father has passed on. This type of dream is almost certainly a psychical sympathy. It is the kind of strange rapport that we find among identical twins. Many explanations have been given. The two most valid ones, as far as I am able to consider, are first, the psychic sympathy of blood. That this mysterious magnetic thing that we call blood is highly individual. That it descends also in families that have a psychic rapport through the magnetic field of the blood, therefore have a certain contact with others involved in this blood descent. The second answer is that the psychic field of the individual is also a kind of blood, and that the psychic fields of persons related by blood or of great attachment of another kind, in which a powerful sympathy binds them together. This is the sympathetic concept of Paracelsus. That this powerful sympathy makes them aware of what occurs to each other. That each becomes aware of what occurs to the other. Now we may say many persons having such apparent sympathy are still not aware of these occurrences. Three children are involved when a parent dies. Two of them are not in the slightest aware. The third has a prophetic dream. The answer here seems to lie in the sensitivity of the one child and the ability of that child to interpret impulse into a dream phenomenon. Perhaps a more psychic internal attachment than the others possess, or some peculiar relationship by which they were the one who had the impression. Where, for instance, a thing of this nature occurs, it is almost certainly a problem of telepathy. Or any dream that is based upon some form of knowing that depends upon someone else knowing or doing. Therefore, any dream which can be explained by a transference of thought is probably best considered on that level until we go further. But this explanation should not be held as dogmatic, for it is possible that in this so-called telepathic area of dreams, there may be a dozen subdivisions with various factors involved in the transmission of the dream impulse. Clairvoyance also is different from thought transference or the generally termed extrasensory band, in that it may possibly involve, and sometimes does involve, occurrences happening at a distance to which the individual has no known psychic relationship. The person, as in a dream traveling in another land, may become aware of things happening in that land, or may see events which might not have any particular personal bearing. But if these events are occurring at the time of the dream, or the event follows the dream closely, then it is quite probable that such a relationship exists. If, however, the event has not occurred, if the event does not coincide with the dream, but still happens ultimately, then pure clairvoyance, or the ability to see or to know a thing at a distance, will not answer the question. Many of the American Indian medicine priests had the power, according to their own belief, and is testified to by the experiences of their people, of being able to locate game or to locate herds of animals at a distance. The old priest would simply, in his own terms, sit down, quietly meditate, and send his consciousness up and down the wilderness and find those herds. This, however, does not consist of a prophecy, someone hearing him tell where the herd is. Later, might say that he is prophesying that it will be there. What he has actually done, according to his own teaching, however, is that he has been there and seen it there. Therefore, that he has been able to project consciousness. This projection of consciousness may be consciously recorded, not as a journey to the herd, but as a visualization of its location. It may come in a vision or in a dream. Most of the wisdom of the old priests, most of their instructions, most of their discoveries were recorded in the dream sequence form, because the inward experience broke through to their outer consciousness in this way. The same is true of this type of dream as many other similar experiences, that they are most likely to be recorded in the interval between sleeping and waking. Man sleeping most heavily in the first 2 or 3 hours of rest is not so likely to have the visions occur or the dreams become consciously received during these first hours of heavy sleep. The most common time of the dream or the mystical or metaphysical experience is therefore near the end of the sleeping period, which would correspond to the early pre-dawn hours in the life of most persons. And the majority of mystical or meaningful dreams occur between about 4 a.m. and sunrise. During this time, the consciousness is sort of suspended between the sleep and waking state, and is slowly drifting toward waking. And there is a neutral time, apparently, an equilibrium between sleeping and waking, during which the dream can be not only inwardly experienced, but the person retains an outward conscious awareness of the dream. Being somewhat awake, we are able to remember it. Being somewhat asleep, we are able to have it. And the combination is the recorded dream. Other dreams probably were occurring during the deeper hours of sleep. But unless they are pressureful enough to break through and cause the person to awake, he is not likely to keep a very long record of them. This is probably also the reason why he has a tendency to forget them, unless they are peculiarly intense. Most dreams that have unusual meaning, prophetic or otherwise, are repeated to indicate, apparently, that something should be done about them. The person receiving a dream of meaning to himself, and not finding the meaning, or not accepting the meaning, or misinterpreting the meaning, will very likely have the dream repeated. If, however, he fully grasps its significance and accepts it, the dream is not likely to be repeated. Consequently, if you think you have solved the dream, but you keep on having it, the chances are you have not solved it. But you have to approach it in a different way. Warning dreams can involve sometimes even physical accidents. They can warn the individual or cause him to almost visualize a state that is to arise in himself. But we have what are called accident-prone people. And this is something that, again, has never been thoroughly solved. But there is something that seems to indicate that even a so-called sudden accident emergency is not just merely a fortuitous and isolated incident. The accident-prone person has within himself a susceptibility to certain occurrences. This susceptibility is the result of some peculiar characteristic of his own nature. And the dream may frequently symbolize this proneness to a certain type of incident. I've known persons who were under a very heavy problem of being accident prone, who have had as many as a dozen accidents in one day. They were none of them very serious. Maybe once the person hit the thumb with the hammer, perhaps a little later slipped and fell, a little later reached to an upper shelf and threw out a sacroiliac, and so the day went. It was just one of those days people like to forget about. Yet this type of accident-prone sequence has a meaning. It has to arise in some symbolic pattern of personal intensity. The accident-prone person is, at the time, out of adequate control of his own reflexes. Therefore, he doesn't stop soon enough, he doesn't move slowly enough, he doesn't skillfully guide the nervous reflexes. He is out of the immediate integration of his own reflexes. Now, in the cases involving certain types of incidents in dreams, a chronic state of being out of control will produce a whole series of accident situations to which the individual is prone. The next day, if he gets better control of himself, he may find the tendency fade away. But all other things being equal, we know that the person who is nervous is most likely to be accident prone. And we know that the person who goes to sleep in a highly nervous state is going to have certain experiences more clearly than a person who sleeps in a relaxed condition. And nature always trying to straighten things out warns the sleeping person who is tense that he is in an accident-prone condition. And the dreams may take the form of accidents. Perhaps the accidents in the dream do not take place, but the accident tendency will cause other occurrences that can later be psychologically, symbolically associated with the dream. A man rushing headlong down the street in the dream comes suddenly to the end of the road and falls off into a vast depth in which he struggles hopelessly and finally wakens in a cold sweat. Nature is telling this individual that his psychological procedure is panic, that he is rushing headlong into a situation. Now, what the situation may be may have nothing to do with a paving situation or the end of a street. But nature is reminding him that his tension can cause him to fall into disaster. Nature gives him these continuous warnings. Nature will give the alcoholic warnings. Delirium tremens are a form of such warnings, namely that the alcoholism has reached an acute state, and if something is not done, it will threaten both the mind and the physical health. But the warning comes in the form of seeing something that isn't there. Now, it is not when man under alcoholism dreams of the proverbial snakes that Riley saw, according to the poems of James Whitcomb Riley, it does not mean that the person with this dream is going to be bitten by a snake. It means that his alcohol tolerance has been exceeded, and that therefore the dream is symbolical of a situation that is destroying him. The symbolism takes traditional or mystical form, but the warning dream always warns us that in some way we are out of integration, and that the continuance of this state will prove disastrous. There are very few persons who ever dream of dying. They may dream of being dead, but not of dying. Very few persons in dreaming of a disaster remain asleep until the disaster is consummated. Usually the struggle to save themselves at the last minute wakens them, and they are never quite certain as to the outcome of the dream. This again is prodromic, that the individual who becomes awake escapes the vicious or disastrous pressure of the dream. The dream is therefore, by its own nature, never fatalistic. It is, however, powerfully indicative. It tells us what may happen, but it does not complete the incident as far as our own experience is concerned, always appearing to imply that if the individual who is passing through a dream tragedy can struggle into the state of awakeness, he can dissipate the nightmare. He can get out of the situation, which is a highly involved psychic pattern. Therefore, nature is telling us always, when we want to get away from some dismal or horrible situation, wake up. For the very process of waking breaks the strange tension of the dream. In the same way, the process of waking becomes the process of awareness, of suddenly being certain of certain things, understanding them, knowing them, becoming awake to our own mistakes, awake to our own folly, awake to our own needs. When we wake up from a mistake, we also break the pattern. And nearly all prophetic dreams bearing upon the life of the individual, if they are of the nightmare quality, involve this escape by awaking, which is almost a statement of philosophy. It is truly a statement of Buddhism, that the dream becomes the symbol of the entire mirage of existence, from which the individual awakes, and in awaking escapes from the tyranny of psychic process. All these things mean that certain dreams, many dreams, have meaning. That many dreams in general indicate the direction of events. That some are derived from certain clairvoyant factors, others from telepathic factors, others perhaps from an acute judgment. Some being also the pressure of our own eternal and inevitable self-demand. Some being the stamping of the psychic nature's own directive upon our lives. Some the meaning of ourselves coming through to us. Others in turn the obvious effort to point out that a direction, if continued, will prove fatal. All of these various aspects can arise from the different levels of our own consciousness and involve also faculties and perceptions beyond our present general acceptance. Thus, the sleep-dream phenomena is not as simple, I do not think, as many people believe it to be. There is much more to be learned, but it is always wise to assume meaning where the probabilities of meaning exist, and from meaning to answer the question, if we can, what does it mean to me now? Why did it happen to me just at this time? And what does it tell me that I should know in order to prevent the fulfillment of the negative aspects of the dream itself? The dream indicates that there is a negative factor at work in life if the dream is morbid. Therefore, this factor must be found and corrected. And the psychological fact remains that when it is corrected, the dream ceases. Therefore, it has served its purpose. And to discover the purpose is to erase the repetition of the dream or its morbid implication. So these things we all have to work with, and a little self-analysis and study may produce not only interesting results, but actually will enlarge the general knowledge of the field, so that each person in this area, because it is not well developed, can make personal discoveries that have meaning and can perhaps ultimately assist in the directing of the research mind into the channels necessary for the fuller explanation of dream phenomena. Time is up, so I guess that's all for now.